Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, CEO and founder of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlocking and Profit Zones. And I believe resilience is vital to business growth. And here to talk with me today about this is Carl. Carl is the MD and leader in the Capital Markets Division and Management Consulting Division of Convergence Inc. Prior to that, you know, Carl has got tremendous experience and wealth of knowledge with inside financial services. He has worked both in the consulting world and also in the investment banking world and done stints and at senior positions in both KPMG, Credit Suisse, and others. So, you know, Carl, super excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Brilliant. And as we kick off the show, folks, as always, I like to give you a bit of a synopsis as to where we're going today. We are going to be talking about resilience, and it's one of the most popular topics that is being discussed today in fintech and in growing companies, right? To some, resilience is maybe a sort of miracle drug or a personality trait that can heal all wounds and right all wrongs. Well, in all honesty, maybe it is and maybe it isn't, but it is a topic that is always high on the agenda for the right reasons and for a good reason, because once you have this trait, a lot of things take place. There's always positive energy and positive outcomes with people who are resilient. They break down barriers. And perhaps the most important thing is, if you have resilience, a lot of what you do in your ecosystem can be improved. So super excited to bring Carl into the discussion today. And let's kick off at the top. And, you know, Carl, I'm keen to get your insights here and maybe talk about why you think it's vital for fintech founders, leaders, executives to be resilient as they go through the growth process?
Well, I mean, I think resilience is a key component, but it manifests in a lot of different things, both culturally, personally, technology-wise, et cetera. Yeah. But I think the resilience factor in fintech is pretty much why we're in existence, right? Our ability to pivot and navigate the changing forces in financial services is part of that resiliency. And we always have to think about how many times customers or clients have come to us and asked us to do something that is outside of our, you know, our normal course of business. And it happens every single day. So we have to build upon that and educate ourselves to recognize that we must pivot in, especially in financial services, where the game is changing on a daily basis, right? New types of strategies and entities and technologies are popping up into the space. And we have to be privy to all of that and understand it and be able to pivot when we need to.
Yeah, I like it. Pivoting, new strategies, entities, new tech is coming up. But also, you know, there's new people out there. There's new public out there. And I recall a story not too long ago with a friend of mine. He was chatting about one of his businesses, which was going through a bit of a bit of a tough spot. It was 5 or 6 years old, but for whatever reason, the European market just didn't really like it. It wasn't able to go to the next level and to really get the growth that him and also, you know, the investors wanted. So, you know, by chance, I would say, but actually not by chance, by being resilient, he connected the dots, right? And he was mm-hmm. able to talk to a friend or a contact out in South Africa. And they looked at this product. They go, oh, this product is absolutely amazing. He's like, really? Yeah, no, it is. It's absolutely amazing. I was like, why is it amazing? He said, because the people in South Africa aren't in the West, right? They do not have internet access. They do not have access to, you know, all the financial, I guess, doors that the West have and the people in Europe have. So your solution would be perfect for the folk that are in the townships in South Africa, maybe in parts of Africa. So what do? He went over and he started doing some work. And lo and behold, a couple of years later, actually, it's a thriving business. And he's raising, I think he's gone through and raised a seed round, which is fantastic. Here's the thing, right? If he wasn't resilient, to your point, and he wasn't able to pivot, and he wasn't able to connect the dots, then the access that he's given the guys and the girls on the streets of Soweto and Alexandria right now wouldn't have happened. Right?
Yeah. It's so funny that you say connect the dots, because I use that phrase all the time with my clients. So just to give a bit of background, I grew up through the ranks in operations and financial services, but ultimately got to the consulting side of the things. And you always recognize that when you're doing consulting, if you're good at it, it's part art and part science, right? It's about being able to read the audience and connect those dots. Mm-hmm. And be able to say, okay, this is a similar problem. Two different clients are experiencing the same problem, but they're going about it a different way. And what I always found in the consulting side of the business is you absolutely need that brain power and that understanding of connecting the dots. But what's becoming more to the forefront than ever before, especially as it relates to solving problems, is managing data. Yeah. And having the right kind of data and using the right kind of engines to manipulate that data. And so I always look at the art and science of having the experience and the expertise married and coupled with having analytics and information that provide you with a quicker, faster, smarter way of doing business. So connecting those dots is always, always at the forefront of my thought process.
I like it. And being able to look at, let's say, data, right, as an executive, and have a meaningful conversation with yourself in a way, and then obviously also with your team, allows you to build up the know-how and strategize what direction to take and when to take it. And in this instance, you know, Hans was able to go down a path because he was able to connect the dots. In instances with a lot of financial institutions, they look at the data. And actually, let's be honest, I've worked in capital markets, I've been around you, I know also work in that space. You know, I feel that actually sometimes we aren't able to connect the dots when we look at that data, because the data is just so, want a better word, and this is necessarily not the best word, messy. Yes. There's just a lot of gaps, yes. Right? So how can leaders... You know, how can we build up I don't want to get into the whole data discussion, but how can we build up a better system that allows us to really understand what path to take in such a exhaustive, maybe, world of financial services? Because there's a lot of data hitting you all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I always look at data as from a consultative perspective. And that perspective is very simple. What problems are we trying to solve? And by being smart enough to understand what the problems are for our clients, as an example, we then can sort of build what we think that management of information should look like. And then in some cases, it's a very simple problem like, all right, I have a client that I just onboarded and it has to go through 5 different systems, right? Mm-hmm. How do I solve that problem of normalization, normalizing data, normalizing that information to as complex as And I was speaking to a large investment bank a few weeks back, and they said their onboarding procedure is 256 steps. 256 steps. Think about that for a second. So how do you solve that problem, right? There is a variety of different technologies out there that could supplement it. But what it all comes down to in the end, and that's why I put my consultative hat on, is, as we all know, getting a technology is not the panacea of solving problems. It's another tool in the toolkit. And to be able to connect those dots and implement those technologies into the current framework of an organization, whether it be large or small, is what fintech companies do or should do.
Yeah, I like it. I also, when I talk about this with my clients a lot, because it is critical to firstly understand the data and then obviously move off the back of that. But, you know, what do I look at with regards to resilience, and not just personal resilience, it's company resilience, brand resilience, community resilience, movement resilience. I always ask the question, you know, what are your leaders doing? How are your relationships with your public, your investors, your clients, your employees, your prospects? You know, how are your relationships? How do you communicate? You know, what does a communication look like? You know, it's for want of a better word, I go through the LRC triangle. At each part of the triangle, you know, there's a question. And more often than not, you know, there is a lot of optimization required. And why is that? It's not because we are doing a bad job. It's just because there's a lot of focus on product, or sales, rather than actually, let's lead correctly. Let's build really long-lasting relationships. Let's communicate in a way that builds affinity towards our brand, our product, our movement. Right?
I totally agree with that. And some may say that's old school, but old school is new school because, you know, when you look at how you communicate with clients and the relationships that you have with clients, as a person that's been doing consulting for a while, a lot of the, you know, engagements that I have are one and done engagements, right? But what I find is if they trust you as a person, listen, we're all humans, right? Exactly. We all want to be valued in some respect, and we all want to be treated fairly, and we want to be treated with respect, and all of those things. And I always boil it down as, how would I communicate to this person if it was my daughter? Would I communicate with this person if it was a family member? How would I communicate with a person that I feel is close to me? All of those nuances of relationship building goes far beyond just the product or the service. And I think, you know, in today's fast-paced world where you can get information at a nanosecond, that kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And I think, you know, longer-term relationships and firms that become successful are not just because of their product. They're because of their culture. Because of their ability to understand client problems, their ability to understand their constituency that they're talking to. I mean, I have this motto that says, you can always do right by the client by sitting in their seat. If you sit in their seat, that means that you understand their perspective and you understand who they are, and you can make intelligent choices for them and advise them accordingly.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. And, you know, building those relationships, as you pointed out, you know, it doesn't take 5 minutes. Maybe it does in some instances, but it takes a while, right? So you have to be patient. And being patient is also part of being resilient, right? If you're not patient, you just want, you know, a quick buck or a quick sale, I'm sorry, it's not going to work. It might work, but it might crash and burn. And it's something that, in all honesty, once you go through that process and all of a sudden you look back at 15, 10 years, 5 years, you know, time, you go, wow, actually, you know, the relationships are built up, I can now potentially, let's say in inverted commas, leverage somehow. And maybe it's a shorter term relationship, but then all of a sudden you can start, you know, really having an impact on what it is your mission is set out to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, towards that comment about relationships, I just came back from the Game Ops conference down in Grand Cayman. And obviously, I haven't been to a conference in probably 5 years, three because of COVID, and then, you know, just because I was running my own business, didn't have the time. I met so many familiar faces that were in different roles that I recognized, you know, the connection, but also that we could do business together now.
Yeah.
So those relationships, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have been in the industry long enough where I have quite a bit of connections. But I would say that anyone that's, you know, in the development stages of their business or of their careers, developing those relationships and keeping them, which I didn't really focus on early in my career. I said, well, you know, if they're not a client of mine, why do I need to talk to them? But it turns out they could be a client. It just may not be now.
Yeah.
And those relationships are so vitally important because, again, it's hard enough to do business in our sector, in our segments, but you want to be able to do business with people that you enjoy to at least work with, right? It doesn't always happen, but it's the goal, right? So you want to develop those relationships that make sense.
Yeah.
And keep them.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. And I mean, looking back, it strikes me that you're extremely self-aware. And I guess self-awareness also plays a role in helping you as a leader, as an executive, as a founder, as someone that's paving a new path, in a way manage the ups and downs, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I've gone through a number of iterations of starting a business, running a business, being successful, selling it, spinning out, doing it again, not being successful, being somewhat successful. There's ups and downs all throughout the process, but I'll give you an example of self-awareness. So outside of myself, because, you know, I think that's an evolving thing for every human being, but a perfect example of that would be a startup investment manager, right?
Yeah.
Spinning out of a big shop, has had multiple of billions of dollars under management, has a great strategy, understands that niche of what he does. He spins out. He has a conversation with me, which I've helped start businesses all the time in the startup space. And, you know, we start going through the pros and cons of what he's trying to do. And he says, well, I got that. I understand that. I'm good with that. I have a very good understanding of all of these things. What I find is that 9.5 times out of 10, those individuals that think they know everything are not self-aware at all. It's the important people that are smart enough to know what they don't know and are self-aware that become the catalyst for a great relationship.
Yeah. I mean, there's some powerful stuff that you just mentioned there. And, you know, I want to take this one step further. And if you look at the individual, you look at yourself, it's fine. But also, I believe that you need to have self-awareness of the community or public or ecosystem that you're actually playing in, right?
For sure. Yes. Yeah. I mean, understand that your competitors, first and foremost, but don't focus on them.
Yeah.
Understand what they do because you still got a business to run. There is self-awareness and then self-obsession, which you have to be able to bifurcate because sometimes we are obsessed with what others are doing and not concentrating and keeping our eye on the ball for what we're doing. And that develops into a trap. And it's very easy for technology companies to get modeled in social media or modeled in, you know, what competitors are doing and not focus on the end game. So that self-awareness is about understanding your competitors, but it's also about understanding what problems you're trying to solve.
Yeah, yeah.
Because as fintech companies, we're trying to solve problems. We're trying to do things quicker, faster, smarter, right? And we need to understand what the problem set is so the audience at large who has that problem is attracted to what you're doing.
Exactly.
So that self-awareness of being able to connect those two points is so vitally important. And I mean, maybe it's because I have a certain level of experience that I can understand that innately, but I would challenge everyone that's out there listening to think about if they really do understand the problems of the client or prospect that they're trying to sell to.
Yeah, it's a great challenge and something that should definitely be, if not right at the top, very, very close to the top of what you should be doing and what you should be, sort of what you should be standing for. I mean, if you are solving problems for, let's say, for those folk out in the townships in Soweto, right, or Alexandra, you know, think about the impact your solution is going to have, right? But then there's this other thing you got to think about. You got to think about how you can spread that solution into the community, because there's a community. You know, maybe Facebook and LinkedIn, et cetera, is not going to work. But, you know, going to the Shabin or going to the chief and actually having a community meeting and talking about the solution. I'm actually being honest here because I've been to these Shabins and I've been to the chief. So, but all of a sudden you are discussing a solution that solves a lot of problems for a lot of different people. In this instance, because of the cultural differences, the chief will recommend the solution to others. I mean, let's bring it into real terms here. If you're into terms maybe that other listeners can understand, if you're solving an AML problem, a fraud problem, you're an anti-money laundering business, and there's a few out there, you know, tech is one part of the equation, right? Sure. The other part of the equation is, for me anyway, moving your community, your public, which is the regulators, the investors, your consumers, yes, your potential prospects, yes, along the path to the new version of a financial ecosystem, which doesn't allow fraud to ever, ever happen. If you're not doing that, then for me, you're just in it for an exit and a nice paycheck. I don't know what your opinion is.
So that leads me to what I have preached for a very long time in terms of how do you get that community to be cognizant of what you do. And that's, to me, in the form of thought leadership. So providing thought leadership in a variety of different capacities, and it doesn't have to be a 20-page research paper, but it certainly has to be meaningful to the audience that you're going after. And at Convergence, we spend a lot of time focusing on thought leadership and the ability to provide information and transparency about what the industry is doing and how it's reacting and how it's moving, both for service providers and the investment managers that are part of our ecosystem. It's vitally important to provide a perspective where your thought leadership is impactful, not only to the audience, but it reinforces what you're trying to do as a company. And it reinforces why your company is important. Mm-hmm. And it's not an easy thing to do, but it's certainly an easy concept to get through to say, if I provide thought leadership that touches upon the problems that I know I can solve for my clients, I should be able to promote that and give that information to clients or to prospects or to the audience at large, or to a conference, or to the regulators, or to whatever audience that is impactful to your business. I think that's an extremely important process in developing brand awareness, as well as just, you know, having the ability to have people take you seriously, that you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but you know, you mentioned brand awareness, but it's also making your public aware of a new playing field, right? Because sometimes, you know, they aren't aware of that. I mean, there's the age old saying of, you know, Henry Ford. He said, if I listened to the customers, they would have just asked for a foster horse, right? Okay, well, you know, he went out there and he created and he innovated. And we are the same in the fintech space. We are creators and we're innovators, right?
For sure.
To go out there and innovate.
Yes. And doing things quicker, faster, smarter is the name of the game. And how we facilitate doing that. Just to give you an example, Convergence has over 45,000 registered entities in its database. It cures that data and provides you reports so you can understand non-investment risks. For an average Joe at a prime broker, as an example, to get that information quicker is impossible. You'd have to look at an ADV. You'd have to sort through all that information and pick out the risk factors that you see are important to you. I can download a report for a manager in a minute, and I could be in field goal range for understanding their non-investment risks in less than a minute, less than an hour, you know, after looking at it. That's the kind of quicker, faster, smarter thing that will create efficiencies. I mean, I can remember, so I'm a drummer as a musician. So one of the things that I recognized was, oh, what are these drum machines? You know, they're going to replace drummers. Well, they didn't. They just became another tool in the toolkit to make drummers better at what they do. Yeah. It's the same thing here. It's about creating efficiencies that allow us to be able to do our jobs better, think on a higher level, and not worry about, you know, the data block and tackling, if you will, of risk management that we don't even want to think about now.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
You know, as part of creating efficiencies, we have to be able to adapt to different situations. We've already mentioned it today. You know, a lot is changing in financial services. There's new digital banks. There's, new points of services offerings coming out. There's new capital markets stakes. There's a lot of different things going on. So being able to adapt or have that ability to adapt within the market, but also as a leader, is vital, right?
Yeah, no question. Even more important than that is being able to recognize the threats to those new businesses that are popping up. You know, you can take crypto as an example. Crypto banks, crypto custodians, crypto investment managers, crypto trading, all of that has created an incredible industry that was not there 3 or 4 years ago, realistically. Yeah. But there are challenges to it. And the smart people who recognize, I see an opportunity, but I also need to solve some of these challenges, are the ones that are going to win.
Yeah, totally agree. And as we wrap up this section, we get into the flash round, which is a little bit of fun. What are the two or three things that you would like to say to those executives, founders, and leaders out there as they, you know, move forward in their growth and they figure out how to become more resilient and better place to lead their movement and their solution to market?
Well, I mean, we've been talking about a few of them, but one is, first and foremost, listen and learn. Listen to what's out there, learn from what is being said to you or via the industry, and distill that into how it fits into your organization and your plan. The second is, and again, we've talked about this, be self-aware. Understand where you need to pivot, how you need to pivot, and more importantly, be confident and patient. You know, I've run boutique businesses and sold them on numerous occasions, and there have been many times, especially during the pandemic, where I felt, I'm not going to survive. This is not going to work. But I stuck to my perseverance and my confidence, and I pivoted and I did something different, right? So always remain patient and diligent, but be confident in what you can provide. And if you're listening and learning, you're pivoting.
Nice. Yeah, brilliant advice. And, let's rumble on, as they say, to the flash round, which is all a bit of fun. You know, drum rolls. I'm not a good drummer, but I do have a drum. There you go. Everyone knows, all the listeners out there, flash round is a bit of fun. It's a bit of fun at the end of the show to get to know the guests and also for the guests to have a chance to ask me a question. So how does it work? I ask Carl three questions, and he then takes the mic and he is allowed to ask me one, which is a bit unfair, but that's the rules. I didn't make them. Someone else did. And here we go. So let's see. What is the way of the future? Digital banks or community high street banks?
I think there's a place for both, but I think digital banks is going to win out.
Yeah, okay. Should financial services be accessible to everyone, including, you know, when I say everyone, I mean everyone?
Well, financial services is accessible to everyone. It's just a question of what someone is trying to accomplish.
Good answer.
You still need expertise to, I mean, you can't have a graduate out of high school go into investment banking and expect that they can do investment banking, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a certain level of experience and expertise that you need to learn. So I would say financial services has always, let's put it a different way, it's been open to all. It hasn't necessarily been that way all the time, but I see in today's world it being much more open to everyone to either get into financial services or be a part of financial services.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Good response. And now this is the million-dollar question for those out in the States and maybe out sort of New York way. Yankees or Mets?
Mets.
Yeah.
Mets. I've been a Mets fan my entire career, my entire life. And and unfortunately, I've been a Mets fan my entire career, my entire life. I don't hate the Yankees. I just don't like them. My team.
Okay. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, there we go. And now I give you the mic and you can ask, give me a question. Ask me a question. What would you like to know about Richard?
Okay, so my question to you, Richard, would be, why do you do this? Yeah, why do you do these podcasts? Why do you want to have these conversations? I think I know what the answer is, but I'll ask it anyway.
No, yeah, great question. And, you know, in all honesty, this is it. So I want financial services to be accessible by every single person out there, no matter who you are, no matter where you come from. And I believe that fintech is the solution to unlock, you know, the vault, right? And once we get mass adoption of the different solutions that are out there, actually what's going to happen is society in general is going to have a positive impact on society in general. And that's what I want to do. I want to work with as many startups and scale-ups that are not only changing the way of financial services, but also changing the ideas, the management, the leadership of an industry that actually needs a bit of an oomph as we move forward into a digital world. So
that's awesome. I applaud you because you're marrying the business with the social aspect of it. And I think that's so vitally important nowadays.
Yeah, brilliant. And, you know, as we end today's podcast, Carl, it's been brilliant having you on the show. How can folks out there get in touch with you and the team?
So you can reach me at cversella@convergenceinc.com. And you can follow me on LinkedIn as well. I am also there, Carl Vercella, V as in Victor, ERSELLA.
Brilliant. And I'm Richard Doty. Looking forward to welcome you back to the next episode next week. And I believe resilience is vital to growth.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.